Hey, this is Carmine Appice, and you're listening to Focus on Metal. Keep rocking.
Hey, Metalhead, Scott Thompson here, welcoming you to yet another episode of Focus on Metal. Hope you guys have been enjoying all of the episodes over the last few weeks. I know it's been very busy for us with having James Kotak on and then firing off the second episode of our Little Mountain Sound project with John Karabi relating all of his tales about recording the self-titled Motley Crue album up there in Vancouver. Definitely a couple of great chats with both of those guys. And this week, the action continues with another drummer. And of course, you heard him at the beginning of the show, not just any drummer, a legendary drummer. When guys like John Bonham point to a drummer and say, he's the guy that influenced me, that's a legendary drummer, and that's what this guy is, the one and only Carmine Appice. We had Carmine on a while ago, so far back. In fact, I can't even remember exactly why we had Carmine on. But nonetheless, he's back again this week talking to us all about a bunch of stuff that's going on in the life of Carmine Appice. So settle in and enjoy this one. But before we get to Carmine and everything that's going on with him, I think we'll do a little track of the week. So for track of the week this week, we feature our first band from South Africa. Our track of the week this week is from the band Dead Lucky, from their brand new release called Sons of Lazarus. These guys have been compared to Motorhead and Danzig and the Misfits, and I think all those comparisons are pretty apt. These guys are definitely straight ahead type rock and roll. I'm surprised someone hasn't thrown out AC/DC as a comparison as well, but definitely these guys are in that vein of stuff, and they've been doing a ton of touring. And they've opened up for bands like Bring Me the Horizon, Wolf Mother, Rival Sons, Trivium, and also Killswitch Engage. So they've opened for a bunch of great bands. So, these guys now, they're pretty big down in the Cape Town area, and they're setting their sights to make it big in Europe. And their PR company has said, hey guys, can you kind of spread the word about these guys? And took a listen to it, and yeah, it's really cool stuff. Like I said, good straight-ahead rock and roll, and it's very easy to get into. So this album came out on March 13th and is available as a regular CD. It's also available as a digipack. So if you want to go out and get yourself a copy of that, I urge you to do so. And if you want to find out more about these guys, you can hook up with them at deadlucky.co.za, or you can also hook up with them on Facebook at facebook.com/deadluckyrockandroll. And these guys, their motto is, it's louder and hotter than you'll ever want it. And I think that the track this week will definitely prove that one out. The track I'm going to play is called Favorite Kind of Woman. This one has been inspired by the one and only Lemmy Kilmister and his wisdom, of course, that love affairs and rock and roll behave like oil and water. And these guys took that credo from Lemmy and turned it into a song. So our track of the week this week, from their new release, Sons of Lazarus, this is Dead Lucky with Favorite Kind of Woman. We'll be right back. There you go. Track of the week from Dead Lucky. You can see those guys leave nothing to the imagination, no innuendo in those songs, just like Lemmy. Straight talking. Although sometimes when Lemmy's doing straight talking, you can't quite understand what the hell he's saying. Nonetheless, he's Lemmy and he can do whatever the hell he wants in my book. And again, if you want to get a hold of those guys, facebook.com/deadluckyrockandroll or deadlucky.co.za. So as I said before, our guest this week is Carmine Appice. Guy has been around forever. Vanilla Fudge, Cactus, Blue Murder, most recently Rated X. The guy certainly has a storied history, and we are honored to have him back on the show as a guest this week. So to prime the pump for a little bit of Carmine conversation, why don't we roll a bit of his music from the not-so-distant past. This one is off of the King Cobra 2 release from just a few years back. Features some great drumming from Carmine. This one's called Hell on Wheels, and we'll go from this right into our conversation with Carmine Appice.
Heading into the last day of this 4-day run, we did the Drum Wars. We did started with a masterclass in Syracuse, and so we did a little warm up gig at a place called Waterloo, in New York. And then we went to Buffalo last night, and tonight Rochester. So yeah, doing a little run, spreading the Drum Wars word, and having some fun.
Awesome, and. And hopefully my buddy Ethan isn't stealing the show on you. Is he behaving himself?
He's doing okay. You know, he's a good player.
Yeah, and, yeah, definitely.
He gets out there a little bit, and then we push him back. And in this show, the guitars and the bass are behind us. The drums are in front, and the guitar and bass behind us. And the singer's sort of right in the middle of us.
Awesome.
When you started the Drum Wars thing, Carmine, originally you started off doing clinics, and it's grown into this Drum War show now. Was that the original plan, or is it just a pleasant surprise?
Was it keep the what?
When you started doing the clinics first, and now it's grown into this Drum War show, was that the plan all along, or is it just a pleasant surprise now that it's happened that way?
Well, Drum Wars is something that we've been doing since 1995 when we did a video of Drum Wars. So we never really put the show together until 2011.
Mm-hmm.
You know, clinics is something different, you know, master classes and clinics. Those are instructional things. The Drum Wars thing is an actual show. And we're trying to, you know, present it more as a show concert. We even have a thing on the website, on the ads that say, beware, this is not a clinic, you know, because it's not a clinic. It's an actual show with like 9 or 10 songs in it and, you know, audience participation. and comedy and, you know, just a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we got a very important question to ask. Ever since we've had Joel and Turner on the show, people have been asking us, and people have been looking about updates on Carl. So what's happening with Carl?
Well, last I heard, Carl had gotten this machine that will help his right hand do what the brain commands. It's like a robot, you know, attached to his arm. And he's actually picking the guitar up.
Nice.
You know, playing with his left hand alone. And he's turned his studio button on again, you know, and he's sort of getting back into it. He's still doing a lot of rehab and everything, but he's getting better. His talking is better, too.
Awesome.
And last month I talked to him, and he actually called me, and we had a much better conversation.
Wow.
So,
well, that's actually awesome news. Great.
Yeah, it is awesome. You know, that was so unfortunate. Boy, this guy was such a talent. Unbelievable player, great singer, great performer. Really a shame, you know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And so that's good. I'm glad we get, you know, an update, and it sounds like it's all some really good news as well. So that's, yeah, great to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going slow, but it's going.
Yeah.
And it's going to be in a couple of weeks. It's going to be 1 year ago it happened.
Wow. That's it's kind of hard to believe.
Too bad.
Yeah, definitely.
That was a shock. It was definitely a shock.
Yeah.
So I had two of my friends pass away this week. Jimmy Greenspoon, the keyboard player from Three Dog Night, he died of cancer. A year younger than me, and my friend George Tutka, who's a great engineer, that engineered a lot of the stuff that I did with Rod. He was a second engineer on a lot of that stuff, and first engineer on some of the stuff.
Wow.
And he died, he was probably 61, he died of cancer, terrible.
Yeah.
Wow. Definitely a rough week for you there, yeah.
Yeah, definitely rough, yeah, but, you know, we try to move on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so, Carmine, I'm curious, I was watching that metal show on Saturday night, and Dave Lombardo on. Now, he said he never warms up. What sort of warm-up routine do you have, or do you even warm up at all?
We don't warm up either. You know, we don't really warm up. The biggest warm-up we do, if I have a pair of sticks in my hand, I do my stick-clicking thing. Was he a guest or did he play?
No, he was a guest. He was asked that question. He said he never warms up.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, most guys, most drummers I know don't really go up and warm up, you know. I mean, actual warm-up, you know.
Yeah.
You just get psyched up a bit, you know. That's about all the warm-up. I mean, me and my brother, too, he didn't warm up. Any of the shows we did, there's no warm-up going on.
Yeah, it's all instinct now, all natural.
Yeah, you just get up and turn on the button.
Yeah. So have you had any, like, drum-related injuries that you've needed operations on over the years?
Oh, yes. Yeah, two rotator cuffs.
Wow.
and the one isn't completely... It isn't 100%, you know. Like, I felt it last night, you know. It really sucks, actually, you know.
Yeah.
Because it limits me to what I can do, you know.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Does that make you change your style a little bit when it starts getting there? You got to start putting a little
bit
of wrist
and stuff. It came from my cymbals being, my China cymbals being up high in the front of me. So I took one of them down, and I put, you know, one set of, like, really low right over my ride cymbal.
Yeah.
But even low like that and everything, when I hold my arm out for a little while, I get like this weird feeling of my rotator cuff. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Kind of sucks.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear your answer on this question, Caroline. You have a lot of drummers now, like, you're regarded like as one of the original, like, power drummers. And you've a lot of drummers now that, like, the way all the albums are mixed now, they're all loud, and it's how fast you can play. Do you think that, like, a lot of the finesse has gone out of the drumming now?
Totally. Totally. There's no dynamics at all in the drummers. And the guitar play. Even Ethan, who's a great player, you know, when the vocal comes in, you're supposed to bring it down a little bit to the vocal.
Yeah.
But these young guys, they don't do that. They just keep playing the same level all the way through.
Yeah.
You know, it's called dynamics.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, my group, Vanilla Fudge, is a master of dynamics, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, dynamics are real important in playing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even the way that, you know, albums get mixed now, too, where they just push everything up to the red. There's just, there's no headroom.
There's no dynamics in the albums. Everything's compressed. It's all limited and everything's the same level.
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, that's one thing that I think it's people really need to have a better appreciation of. That's one of the nice things that, like what Jimmy DeGrasso does on the new Black Star Riders album is, if you really listen, he does this really nice, cool change-ups, and there's just a lot of dynamics in the drums and stuff. It's just old school. It's great to hear.
Yeah, I mean, Vanilla Fudge is made of dynamics. You go listen to an orchestra, they have dynamics.
Right.
You know, there's big crescendos, there's you know, soft parts, loud parts, in the middle parts, there's build-ups, there's decrescendos, you know, it's like wind-down, you know, wind-ups. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Today's music is just on one level.
Yeah, I mean, people point it, you know, they talk about, you know, with Zeppelin with doing that. It's like, yeah, that's nice, but listen to the band that Zeppelin opened for. And then they listen to Vanilla Fudge and be like, oh, wow. Gee, we were doing that in America? So.
Yeah, and we got a new album out called Spirit of 67, which we do all these songs from 1967.
Nice.
And you can go on iTunes and get samples. It's can get on, and if you guys want it, Smitty can get it for you. You know?
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Definitely. Awesome. That'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some heavy songs, you know, some heavy tunes on it.
Well, that's what we would expect from Vanilla Fudge, right?
Yeah, well, that's what we want.
Yeah.
So, Carmen, I'll ask you a question about, you know, you get... Oh, I'm after losing my train of thought here.
Wow, the train left the station.
Yeah, the train left the station.
You sure your age?
I'm 44 in July.
Well, that's not too bad.
So no excuse for the train. So,
Maybe it's too much marijuana. I don't know.
It's the weekend. Now, Carmen, you've done a lot of albums now, you know, over the years. And the new thing now, and you've done it as well, is you're recording separately and using the internet to record them. Do you see that as a different way of doing it? Or do you prefer the other way where the actual band is in the studio?
Well, I prefer the other way. But like with Rated X, we couldn't do that. Everybody lived in a different city, you know?
Yeah.
Same thing with King Cobra, the last two King Cobra records.
Mm-hmm.
We did that way by the internet. But, you know, the good thing is you got to know how to do that, you know? because I'm the first one on the track, and I have to play to it like a demo and then play to a click and make it sound like, you know, I'm not playing to a click.
Right.
You know, so, but I've been doing that for a long time, and, you know, I've mastered that art of doing that. You know? Some people don't know how to do that.
Right.
Yeah. The Rated X actually didn't sound like it was recorded separately. I think it sounds really good. It's a great record.
Yeah, it is a great record, and it does sound like we were all in the same room, but we were, you know, thousands of miles apart.
Yeah.
I think what people also sometimes forget about you, as opposed to a lot of other drummers, is that a lot of times you're also the songwriter as well. So you're not just adding your part, but, you know, a lot of your dynamics and your thoughts and all that are really what the basis of the whole song comes from.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of parts, like in Rated X especially, we got the demo from Italy, and we built on the song. And then when we actually started recording it, you know, things changed. We didn't like some of the riffs that happened. And I would change the riff, and I would call Tony and say, look, I changed the riff to this. Why don't you come up with something new to add to that to make it a whole different part?
Right.
So then Tony would do that, and then we gave it to Carl, and he would do the same thing. And then Joe would sing on it, and, you know, or there might be a guitar solo that went on it, but it changed the whole song, you know?
Right, yeah.
Just by doing that stuff, you know?
Yeah, and speaking of Rated X, Carmine, we know you had one show booked for the summer. Is there any update on any more shows there?
Well, yeah, we're working on shows. It looks like we might have a 12-day period of doing. Joe had a festival. I just came up with a festival yesterday that a friend of mine asked me about. And Joe said he's got a couple, the agent's got a few more dates. So it may end up being about 6-7 shows.
Awesome.
Between the 12th and the 24th of July.
Excellent.
Over in Europe.
Excellent, because that's like one bugbear I have, that all these albums come out from these so-called super groups and they never play one show. So it's nice that you're bucking the trend a little there.
We're trying, yeah. That's the deal. We're trying.
Yeah.
We even contacted the manager that was managing us at the beginning. Which he sort of let it go, you know, for a minute because he got too busy and we didn't have the record ready yet. But he's going to be back in the mix, and he's looking for another record deal right now.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Because, you know, Frontiers is they still go all the way with it. You know, the difference is, you know, you take that band with Doug Pinnick and Korn, drummer, and George Lynch, that mm-hmm. didn't do any shows, and they got on the charts in America.
Right,
yeah.
you know, and that was pretty amazing. So Frontier said that's what they were going to do with Rated X, but they didn't do it, you know?
Yeah.
There's a way to do it in business, and they didn't do it, you know? Yeah.
I think the live thing will be awesome, though. I mean, to hear what you and Tony Franklin do live, I mean, just to have just rhythm section talent is going to be incredible.
Have Blue Murder. I mean, I would love to get Blue Murder together, but you can't get John Sykes out of the house. You know? People want Blue Murder. Last night, I signed a few Blue Murder things. Everybody's going, why don't you guys do some Blue Murder?
Yeah.
And you know what? We're going to add some Blue Murder to Drum Wars.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Actually, Carmine, I got something to tell you about Blue Murder. We're doing a project here on Little Mountain Sound, and we've got 10 episodes, interviews done, and we did one, but we have Tony Franklin on talking about the Blue Murder record. Now, I said to Scotty, or if I get Carmine on, there's a couple of questions I want to ask him about. We talked to Bob Rock as well, so we've Bob involved too.
Great.
Yeah.
But you couldn't get John Sykes, could you?
We couldn't get him out of the house.
I didn't try. We spoke to Tony and we're like, okay, we're not going to try and get John.
Well,
if you, Carmine, if you can't get him, and you know the guy, what chance do we have?
Yeah.
But I'm curious to know, because Tony mentioned that Ray Gillum was one of the singers that nearly got the gig. Can you tell me any of the other guys? Is it okay to name them, or is it so long ago you can't remember?
Originally it was Ray Gillum and Tony and Cozy Powell was in the band.
Yeah.
And when I heard Cozy was in the band, because I loved Tony's playing and I loved John Sykes playing, and I was really pissed. I said, that Cozy gets all the good freaky gigs, you know? And Ray, I loved as a singer. And then I heard that Ray and Cozy were gone, you know? And then I actually went to England. I played... I went there at a time when my brother Vinny was playing with Dio at Four Nights at Hammersmith Odeon to find out where, you know, these Blue Murder guys are. And I actually found out through Chris Welsh, an old journalist from England, from Melody Maker.
Yeah.
And he told me how to get a hold of Sykes, which I did, and I drove up to Blackpool. And Tony met me that night. I arrived at like 3 in the morning. Next day we jammed, and it was like magic. And I said, John said, you know, if you want the gig, you got it. You know, nobody plays like you. I said, well, thank you, man. Okay. So then they had Tony Martin as the singer from Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had set up everything to go to Vancouver and record with Bob. And on the day that they were leaving England, me and John were in L.A., and Tony and the two Tonys were in England. And Tony Franklin was ready to get on the plane, and Tony Martin never showed up. So we didn't know what to do. So Bob Rock said, let's just come, let's get all the tracks done, we'll figure out a singer later. And then while we were figuring out a singer after we did all the tracks, Bob Rock, we took a break, and Bob Rock produced The Cult right after that break. And then we went to L.A. with Tony. And so I lived in L.A. and John lived in L.A. And we auditioned a lot of different singers, including Derek St. Holmes. And we were going to audition Joe Lynn Turner, but I understood that Joe had a problem with John, something to do with Joe had gone out with John's his girlfriend at the time or something. I don't know. It was some sort of mess up with the girlfriend. You know?
It always is.
So we never... Joe being, you know, Joe, I believe it. Anyway, so we never auditioned Joe, but we auditioned a lot of different people.
Yeah.
And then nobody really blew us away. And John had done the demos. And I said to John, why don't you just sing, man? We'll be a trio. Hmm. You know? So Tony seconded the motion. He said, look, we can do backgrounds and you do the lead. So that's what we did.
Awesome. Yeah. Do you think that hurt you guys not having a recognized front man to sing?
Not really.
Yeah.
I don't think it did at all.
Okay.
What hurt us was the fact that, you know, we didn't really have the right manager. That's what my take is.
Mm.
You know, in those days especially, you have to have a strong record company, which we had. You have to have a strong record, which we had. We had strong members. We had strong songwriting.
Yeah.
You know, we had John Kolodner.
Right.
We didn't have a strong manager.
Yeah.
You know, matter of fact, when we were on the Bon Jovi tour, we did 10 dates with Bon Jovi. That's big. We had no manager. We fired the manager we had. Yeah. By the time we got a manager, it was too late.
Yeah. It seems to me, Carmine, and I've spoken to Tony about this as well, you still get asked a lot about Blue Murder.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we can go out, and I'm sure that Blue Murder can go out and sell out venues in different sizes and play big festivals for good money and all that. But for some reason, we just seriously can't get John out of the house. We went to John's house, maybe, I don't know, when he left in Lizzie. That was the reason he left in Lizzie, was to play Blue Murder over, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we had some dates we were going to do, but even before that, we went to John's house, because we all lived in L.A., and we said, okay, Valley of the Kings, and we played it in his little studio. Billy, and we played it, and you know, all the songs we played, there were like 90% there.
Wow.
It's like riding a bike. Yeah.
We've spoken to somebody else recently too, an author that just did a book on Whitesnake, and we talked about that, and he said the same thing too, that it just seems like John just doesn't want to do anything.
Yeah. And what he does, he thinks it's the 80s, and he thinks that, you know, all the bands are going to get $200,000 record deals. I mean, you know, I mean, it's just not there anymore.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
For this kind of music.
Yeah, just one final question, Carmine, about Blue Murder. Of course, Little Mountain Sound is famous for its drum sound. Was there anything different about the way Bob mic'd your kit up? Can you remember? That's different from other albums.
Oh, yeah, we did a lot of experimenting up there in Vancouver. We did, you know, we had mics all over the studio.
Yeah.
You know, we tried all, I brought up all these different drums, different bass drums, different snare drums. You know, there was no expense spared making that record.
Awesome.
You know, we ended up using my old Ludwig bass drums. We ended up using that plus a different variety of snare drums, and I forgot what toms. I think we might have used my Premier tom toms.
Hmm.
Slingerland or Premier, maybe even the Pearl Girl. I don't remember what toms we used. But, you know, we had mics everywhere. We had mics in the loading bay. It was a big cement loading bay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mics are there. And, you know, it was great. And, you know, the drum sound on the analog was even better than what came out on the record, because Bob dumped it all to digital.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? And we kept saying here and there, you know, digital sound was good, and it didn't sound as good.
Right.
And it still sounded great as what came out on the album, but you should hear the analog tapes. It's just a cassette of some of the songs, which is unbelievable.
Yeah. Maybe someday they'll come out. They'll come out before John Sykes leaves the house.
Yeah, it's just a shame, you know, because I love John. We're all close mates, you know.
And, yeah,
yeah.
You know, now, you know, you call him, you don't call back. He doesn't call anybody back. It's very rare you talk to him. Yeah. I used to go to, we used to live like 10 minutes away from each other. And every time I went to L.A., I'd call him, I'd go over for a cup of tea and hang out. And, you know, now I call, you know, and I never hear back from him. Maybe he's pissed at me or something, I don't know.
See, John has something that a lot of guitarists don't have now. He's got a signature sound. You know it's him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think Blue Bird is a little ahead of its time because, you know, when we came out, the first time we made it, then grunge came in. The sound of Blue Murder is sort of like the sound that all these bands, like Avenged Sevenfold and all these other bands have now.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are so unique. I mean, like Richie says, I mean, John has a really unique identifiable sound. Tony, the same thing. And then obviously, you know, there's very few drummers that have that really identifiable push-pull groove that you do. You know, most people continue to play through, but you know how to do that stop and start, and that's just not everywhere else.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It's a style, you know, I didn't realize until, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or so, I got an award from Sabian Cymbals, you know, and I got an award for the world's greatest rock drummer.
Awesome.
Nice.
And I said, before they gave it to me backstage, they gave it to me at the Modern Drummer Awards, Modern Drummer Days. And I said, why? I mean, I don't understand. You know, I thought Ringo was like really the world's greatest rock drummer. And he said, no. He said, you are the world's greatest rock drummer because you set the precedent, you pioneered all this power rock kind of heavy drumming with the showmanship and the whole thing that everybody's doing now.
Mm.
So you can't see any rock band now that's not doing emulating what you started.
Yeah. Can't disagree with that.
No, can't disagree either, Carmine.
I said, wow, I didn't think of it like that. You know?
Yeah.
So, no. I mean, I just do what I influence, so, you know, like, John Bonham and Ian Pace and Tommy Aldridge, people like that. But I didn't realize that they went down the ladder to all the new bands as heavy as they said. And then I started taking notice.
Mm.
You know, this was like, you know, probably in the late 90s when I gave me that.
Wow.
Or early 2000s. And I really didn't take notice, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it went down the ladder so far that, you know, I didn't really think about the fact. I mean, even though I saw like Spinal Tap in the 80s, and I saw my influence in that movie, you know, with the gongs and the way the Chinese cymbals are positioned and all that. Those are things that I started, that I pioneered in drumming, you know. But, you know, the actual playing part was something, I didn't realize it. So I said, okay, I'll take it. Give me the award.
Yeah, so... Caroline, speaking of your career, I know there's been talk of you doing a book. Is there any update on that?
Well, we're working on, there's a big company that has it. I mean, I had a deal for the book, you know, on VH1. Then unfortunately, they went out of, they closed down that department, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and the guy that wrote my book wrote the book with Nikki Sixx, the Heroin Diaries. He wrote that book, too.
Okay.
So he's a really good, he's a really great writer. He's an English writer. He's a great writer.
Yeah.
So now we got the book finished, and it's at another big company. A friend of mine that manages Tommy James and got Tommy James's book out is helping me with it. But I'll tell you what, you know, if it don't happen shortly, I'm going to just self-publish it like Rudy Sarzo did.
There you go.
I'm going to a convention on Monday, which is a CD and book convention, and it's being put on by one of the biggest, what they call one-stop distributors. And these guys, they supply, and they, you know, they like they're called Baker and Kale, and what they do is they bring it to all the stores. They have 3,000 stores, and they distribute for all the big labels, Universal, E1, mm-hmm. you know, Sony, Red, and all that stuff. And they also distribute for all the big book companies, you know, like Simon Schuster and all that. So a friend of mine there said, look, if you don't get the deal you want, we can do the deal, and we can go out, find out how many books we can get ordered. We can order them. We can have them printed. We could pay you X amount of dollars for the book. And then with that, you know, you can hire yourself a publicist and go out and promote the book, you know, and it would be, you know, self-published, but you'll get the book out there and you could definitely sell some. He did that with John Densmore from The Doors, and they sold a good amount of books, you know.
Nice.
And my plan is I want to get a book out and become a published author because I want to go out and do some speaking gigs, you know.
Oh, yeah. That'd be awesome, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I want to talk about my history, talk about, like the stories we just talked about, except, you know, I want to go back to Vanilla Fudge, to Led Zeppelin, to Jimi Hendrix, to all that, you know, and also couple it with, you know, being how to reinvent yourself, because I've been reinventing myself my whole career.
You have, absolutely.
Yeah, I think the great thing about these books now, Carmine, I think when people have had long careers is a lot of the stories, they're pre-internet. So there's actually nothing out there. It's just the people who are there have the stories to tell, and people are always interested in those stories.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, and I don't want to miss the boat all of a sudden these stories and these books don't mean anything anymore, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Because so many, I mean, you know, I started writing this book in the 80s, and I still ain't got it out. You know what I'm saying? I was one of the first guys to want to do this, and I really wanted to tell the stories. I mean, in my book, there's the sex stories that a lot of people leave out because I'm trying to make it realistic of what it was really like to be around in the 60s and Summer of Loves and, you know, all the groupie, when the whole groupie scene started and, you know, and all this stuff started. Mm. You know, we used to have all these crazy, you know, sex stories, crazy sex things went on before AIDS, you know, when there was no, you know, there was AIDS, it really put a damper on all the sex there, a lot of the bands, you know.
That's right.
But it was crazy. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, I know Gene Simmons has been known for saying he went with 6,000 women and all, but my girlfriend, who's a radio person, in New York, and there was a radio chick. When I met her on her website. I mean, on her radio show. She had 500,000 listeners a day, you know, in New York. And she tabulated that I was probably with about 4,500 women, you know.
Did you agree or disagree?
I agree. It's a lot. And, you know, we always goofed with our fans on the air, and now it's 4,501 that I stopped it. 4,501, you know, but it's all true, you know. I mean, when Gene was saying it, I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, those guys were, you know, much bigger than I was, you know, in their careers. So I wanted to make it realistic, and ever since the 80s, you know, I wanted to make it a realistic book. I was originally going to title it The International Rock Guide to Hotel Wrecking. But I thought it was, now I think it's too long of a title, so I'm just calling it Stick It.
There we go.
Yeah, you got to get it past the lawyers first, though, Carmine, don't you? They'll probably go, you can't put that in, you can't put that in, you can't put that in.
Well, I mean, if I self-publish it, you know, all I got to do is, you know, they have the legal department of the company have a look at it and see what the deal is, you know. Cause, I mean, yeah, the opening story is how I got fired from the Ozzy band. You know?
Yeah.
Awesome.
It was really good. I mean, that story alone, it should sell books.
It's got Ozzy in it.
Oh, yeah, and Sharon, you know, Sharon's so vicious, man.
Sharon!
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I can't believe what she's turned into. I'm watching TV the other day, and she's over there, you know, doing a commercial for some sort of diet. And I said, oh, my God. You know?
Yeah.
And you got to understand, when Ozzy met her and I met her, she was huge. She was really fat.
Mm.
Yeah? She was really, really fat. And she was so fat that she used to wear muumuus. you know. And you know, we should. Vinny was saying the other day, he said, you know, we should think that Sharon was Ozzy's mother. You know.
Yeah, I when you go back, you look at some of the old pictures. It kind of looks.
Yeah,
that way.
Look at her now. She's like the total Hollywood, you know, plastic surgery makeover.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And you know, she's bigger than Ozzy.
Yeah.
She used to be bigger than Ozzy before, but now she's really bigger than Ozzy. So anyway, so there's some, you know, stories in there, and you know, it's just the truth, you know.
Yeah.
And how that all happened, and how it, you know, really fucked me up. Excuse my French.
That's okay.
You know, because I'd never gotten fired from a gig like that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you're the first guy to be fired from Ozzy's band, or the last.
Oh, forget about it. I mean, you know, so many people that she's stepped on, including Bob Daisley, who wrote all the songs, you know.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. Yeah, it's terrible.
He wrote a lot of songs on albums after he was blackballed after the Blizzard of Oz and the Diary, and then...
Yeah, he wrote all the songs. He wrote the melodies, the lyrics.
Yeah.
You know? Ozzy's a... You know, just like in Sabbath, Ozzy never wrote the songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if you saw Ozzy's name on the songs, they were probably bought.
Right.
They were bought there. You
know? Yeah.
It's true. I mean, Jake sold his part.
Yeah.
And so said, you know, I know Bob did. They came a fee every right. time.
Yeah, because Jake's come out now, you know, Jake's friends now with Eddie Trunk, who you're friends with as well. And, you know,
yeah.
Eddie's asked him about the Bark at the Moon thing, and all the songs are credited to Ozzy. And, you know, any fan who's a fan of Ozzy's knows that the guitar player that wrote a lot of the material. It's just not Ozzy writing
the
song.
Yeah. And you see, Ozzy, you know, gets only song some of the Ozzy's name on.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, before we let you go, Carmine, you know, obviously you're always a busy guy. What else you got coming up this year that people should be on the watch out for?
Well, we got Vanilla Fudge album, Spirit 67, which is out now.
Awesome.
Go buy that. It's a great record. We got a new Cactus record being mixed.
Oh.
A new live Cactus record, which with a couple of old tracks from 1970.
Nice.
On it. And we're doing some Cactus shows. Me and Vinny are doing the Metal All-Stars European Tour. We're splitting it up, doing a little each. We've got gigs with Cactus coming up in, I believe, South America. And we're planning some more Drum Wars gigs. I've been doing some shows with my Rod Experience show. You know, so I'm getting to play a little bit of all of my career, which is fun.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Like I said, I knew you were going to be busy, but that's one hell of a busy year.
Yeah, and then we're planning to do a tour like in August with a package tour with Vanilla Fudge, a summer tour they're putting together now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that'll be fun. You know, we went back with this manager. We managed us in 10 years ago when we were out with the Doors, so now he's working on a new tour for us with like a package, you know, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, that would be awesome to see. Yeah, good stuff.
Okay, well, listen, guys, I got to go. I got people calling me.
All right.
No problem, Carmine.
I'll talk to you guys soon. Okay?
All right, Carmine.
Thanks, Carmine.
Thanks.
Later. All right, there you go. Our talk with Carmine Appice. Got to tell you, killer guy to talk to, and he's been a huge, huge part of rock and metal history. And Richie and I are both hoping that that book does come out. I'm sure there's some great stuff in there. And of course, way in the beginning of that interview, we did ask Carmine about Carl Cochran. He is the guitar player on the new Rated X release. And if you would like to contribute to Carl's recovery, you can go to rockandrecovery.net and you can make a donation there. They also have some t-shirts they have up for sale that help to fund Carl's recovery, and they also are running all kinds of auctions all the time, so you'd go back there and check every once in a while and see what they have up for auctions. There's usually some pretty cool stuff. And as Carmine mentioned, if you want to keep up with him on the net, you can go to carmineappice.com, and up there got all the latest show dates that he's doing. Those are listed. He's also got a store to go to. You can get all the latest stuff that Carmine's put out, different drum instructional stuff, cymbals, stuff like that. But again, probably the most important thing on that page, because he's such a busy guy, is all of the latest dates for all the stuff he's doing. Those are all listed right on that first page. And if you use Facebook all the time, it's facebook.com/Carmine Appice himself. And on Twitter, just look for Carmine Apiece One. If the whole idea of Drum Wars really intrigues you, but there's no chance that Carmine and Vinny are going to come anywhere near your town, they do have a live Drum Wars album that's out. It's actually out on Carmine's label. His label's called Rocker Records. That's also the label that our buddy Ethan Brosh is signed to. So if you want a bit of the Drum Wars experience, you could go up to the Rocker Records website and order yourself up a copy of Drum Wars Live. There's also a link right from Carmine's page to that site too. So let's say that we roll a bit of tunage right now. I know way back towards the beginning of the show when I was talking about our band of the week, Dead Lucky, I mentioned some Motorhead influence in there, and I realized, you know, we haven't played any Motorhead here on Focus on Metal for quite a long time. And come on, really, when aren't we up for a little bit of Motorhead? And what's better than Motorhead? Live Motorhead. And what's better than live Motorhead? It's them playing one of my all-time favorite Motorhead songs. I'm talking, I am a major big fan of this song. If you know me, you know this is one of my all-time number one favorite Motorhead songs. I'm talking about Killed by Death. So here it is, Little Lemmy doing it live.
The
you go, a little Motorhead. And of course, Motorhead continues to march on here in 2015. Word is they are in the studio working on their, I think, what, 22nd studio album? Pretty amazing considering everything that's gone on with Lemmy's health in the past 18 months or so. But anyways, just amazing stuff. Hopefully it's got a little bit more of the classic Motorhead balls than Aftershock did. I don't know. Personally, a little bit of a disappointment to me on that one there. But of course, any new Motorhead is still great Motorhead, right? And of course, if you do want more of a rundown of what's been going on with Motorhead, he did a really nice interview with Mitch LaFon on One on One with Mitch LaFon back in January. So you can head up to Talking Metal Digital and find that episode and get all the lowdown from Lemmy as of January anyways. And of course, those guys also have some tour dates coming up as well for the spring, which is also amazing. Hopefully, you know, they'll go off without a hitch this year. Kicks off tours April 25th in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and got this whole South American tour. And there's a summer tour that's kicking off in Germany on June 5th. And what else? He's got, yeah, just pretty much all of that stuff. And I think they end the year with the Motorhead or the Motorboat Cruise in the U.S. back, I think, in October. So a busy year for Lemmy and the rest of the guys in Motorhead. And speaking of busy, we are quite busy here at Focus on Metal. Richie and myself have been cranking out the interviews left, right, and center over the last couple of weeks. Got a lot of great stuff to bring to you. Of course, we've got many more episodes of the Little Mountain Sound Project coming up, but also we've got a list of a lot of other stuff that's going on as well. Interviews we've done even over the last few months, we just haven't been able to fit in the schedule, and we did a whole bunch of new ones recently as well. So every week that comes up, it's a case of what are we going to run this week? In a way, it is kind of a good problem to have, right? But definitely some great stuff waiting in the wings. I know Richie had talked about before. We did a whole nice talk with Adrian Vandenberg. We just did another one recently with Jeff Pilson, a whole career retrospective like we did with Red Beach. And we've got a whole bunch of other ones with some other bands, some bands you know, some bands you don't. So lots of stuff in the vaults here at Focus on Metal, ready to be plugged into your little metal ears. Also a reminder, in addition to doing all the stuff here for this show, occasionally I pop up on other shows, and I believe I mentioned this before, but I am on an episode of Mars Attacks with my good friend Victor, and I am appearing in the Decades Volume 3 episode that was just released a few weeks ago, and had a great time with Victor doing that one, and I think that Richie may be appearing on one of those coming up as well. So if you haven't caught that one yet, go up to MarsAttacksRadio.com and look for that one there. Like I said, it's Decades Volume 3. So that will do it for this week of Focus on Metal. For myself and for Richie and everybody else here at Focus on Metal, hope you enjoyed another week of Focus on Metal, and you can keep up with us as usual at focusonmetal.net, focusonmetal.blogspot.com, on Facebook, which now Richie is kindly taking care of for me, so we're actually getting some real-time, up-to-date Facebook stuff happening again. Definitely appreciate him taking that over for me. And you can also follow us on Twitter. So with that, have yourself a great metal week, and until we talk to you again next week, remember,
Focus on Metal!
Everything else is insignificant.
Here? It's over. Go home.